Blog Talk Radio.
Winston-Salem, it's Sunday Night Dead!
I didn't get to see a whole lot of them, but it looked like there were some pretty good ones on today. And my team, the Eagles, will be coming in playing tomorrow night. So I'll be sure to be watching that tomorrow, although don't have particularly high expectations this year. Also, hearing from the chat room that people are having trouble getting in. So as usual, those of you that are familiar with this, let me go ahead here and see if, for some reason, this seems to always help. Long story there about me making a comment about orbs not having ears because they're dust, and kind of pissed off the orb community, so they impact our show. They shut us down every once in a while, give us a lot of trouble. So we're going to appease the orbs this evening. A lot of people from the show, a lot of the hosts up in what I consider my real hometown of Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, for Parafest at the Sands. So big shout out to them tonight. Hope they're having a great time up there this weekend. Bethlehem's a great place. And then another kind of unique thing, our guest tonight, John Fowler, is, let's bring him on tonight from the Midnight Watchman. John Fowler.
Oh, hey.
John, you there? Hey. How
are
you?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry about that. I'm doing good.
Oh, no problem. So I just got to check. So are you actually in Perkasie?
Yeah. So where I am and live and, you know, pretty much normal things. Like you said, you were here too for a little bit, so you know how that goes.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, so I wanted to confirm it before I said it, that talking about small world, we are not talking about a gigantic metropolis in Perkasie, Pennsylvania, but for the first few years of my life, or only like one or two, I lived there, so I guess technically Perkasie is my hometown, so even though I didn't live there very long, so small world here. But how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, besides some computer issues I just got passed earlier today, so I can do some website updates. I'm doing good. So.
Well, we always do that little orb thing to kind of as a joke, but just sometimes we have people having trouble with getting in the chat room tonight, and that's what I'm seeing in the chat room is some people are having some trouble logging in this evening, so we will see. Now, this is the opposite of last week. It seems whenever I do a open call night, that invites all kinds of trolls and crazies out of the woodwork, and so we're getting all kinds of weird stuff going on in the first 15 minutes of the show last week. So
trolls will do that. They'll blow everything down.
yeah, absolutely. And then we get some weird phone calls. The best crank one I got, though, was this guy that worked into his whole call and his whole routine, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air introduction. So he was like, we saw a face in the window and my mom got scared. And then he went into the whole thing. It was actually, I got to give him points for creativity on that one. That's better than some of the goofy ones that that we end up getting. But for our audience, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got interested and involved in the paranormal?
Okay, well, basically for me, like I've told many times to different people here, my reason for getting the paranormal pretty much was, I want to say, like about threefold here. I grew up in the 80s, so obviously I had stuff like Ghostbusters affect me, Unsolved Mysteries, even reruns of In Search Of from A&E, and Arthur C. Clarke stuff was, all over TV more when I was growing up, and The Unexplained was everywhere. And I also had experiences growing up, too, with, I guess you call it the spirit world of the paranormal. And on top of that, my brother and my father had an interest in it as well that I wasn't aware of when I was younger so much. But, I'd find books or other things, around the trailer, and, it helped fuel that interest of what's out there. It's not just something you see on TV. There's people writing about it. There's people talking about these. And it just all kind of got my curiosity up to just keep digging deeper and deeper until, I was a teenager more even. We got out with friends, and checked out all these places, that were supposedly haunted. You know how that goes. Like, everybody pretty much does that at some point. And I wanted to get serious. I did. I wanted to actually do investigations, not just, hang out at places that are supposed to be, scary. I wanted to do something more. And at the time, nobody wanted to do it or could do it. And back then, well, it wasn't as easy to find stuff and people like-minded like that. It just didn't exist. Not like today with all the social media and, ghost hunter fad that goes around. It's not the same. So it took me a little bit to get some people together. Then once we did, basically 2007, we did the Jenny Wade House Museum out in Gettysburg, and we haven't looked back as a team, and I haven't. We've just been rolling along.
Oh, awesome. Now, how did you get – so is that original team, was that the Midnight Watchman, or did that team come along later?
Midnight Watchman, yep. That was my team I created and the only team I've ever been a part of. So – my baby, if you will,
Oh, awesome. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience at the Jenny Wade House? Because did you say you were the one of the first to do the a dual team investigation wasn't there something unique about
your
investigation?
It was our first investigation. Yep. Many teams have done Jenny Wade. It's a small building. You know, if people aren't familiar with Gettysburg, you might even, or even if you are familiar with Gettysburg, you might drive by and not kind of realize it's there because the hotel's wrapped around it. But it's a very unique place. I mean, for first investigation, for me, it was kind of just, you know, a learning experience the whole way around, obviously. You get to, you figure out what you did wrong after the fact, what you did right, and you keep moving. But for us, it was just amazing. And myself, that, you know, the EVPs we got from that place, probably have the 6 or 10 we had initially, you know, as the years go on, you start, you know, learning more, you realize half of them probably aren't, you know, what you thought they were. But there's still a few that we can't, you know, debunk. So it's interesting. I mean, one of the stories we had there was, I thought was, it's funny now looking back on it. We were talking about some children's spirits, you know, and one of our members, John Bolton, decided to say, you know, well, you know, if you like to play games, you like to play games. And the radio walkie-talkie they had for the other two people downstairs did the alarm feature, which, if you ever had a two-way walkie do an alarm feature when it's dead quiet, you're not expecting it, it scares the crap out of you.
I can imagine.
Yep, and the look on his face was classic. And I didn't. None of us knew what to do because we weren't sure what the heck just happened. And, of course, we called down, asked if anybody hit it. Nobody said they did. But then once you look back and listen to all the audio from the other group, my friend Jeff and Tony that were down there, at the same time that radio went off, Jeff decided to go underneath the bed and play hide-and-seek with a spirit. So he set off the radio because it was in his pocket and just didn't know it. But at the time, you know, it took us like a month before we got through all the audio, you know, it was funny, though, because you don't realize that. And it's just one of those things that was a cool experience where you realize it's not what you thought it was. And that's what taught me a long time ago not to hold too tight to stuff you think is what it is, because odds are it's probably not.
Right. Right. That that reminds me of, we were sharing an experience a couple weeks ago with John Coghill, who's one of our hosts on Sunday Night Dead. And we were at Pennhurst not that long ago. And when we first got into the Mayflower building, we were hearing this noise. And at first we thought it was moaning. And the more we listened to it, it was you could hear a voice saying, "Help me." And almost right away, we were suspicious because it was happening with too much regularity. You know, it was like every five seconds or whatever you would hear it. But, you know, even with that, the initial reaction when you first figure out what is being said and this noise coming on, it was still, even though we ended up debunking it and figuring out what it was a haunted house prop that got still no reason. Again, not saying it's necessarily paranormal, but no good reason as to why it went off when it went off. It was plugged in for a couple days without working and just happened to set off in a building that nobody was in, and it was the sound was traveling through the tunnels. But you know, it was still kind of cool for those first few seconds and minutes when you're hearing that noise, trying to figure out what the heck's going on. So it was still.
We did Eastern State, and it was similar thing happened with us. Because Eastern, for anybody who hasn't been to Eastern State, whether you're talking a day trip or an investigation at night or their haunted attraction, there is a lot of noises that carry in that place. It's obvious. It's open. You know, I mean, there's nothing really there to block sound. And we kept hearing this noise sound like it came from, like, the cells above us every time we went down certain hallways. Couldn't figure out what this was, and it was random. Next thing I know, I finally find it's a stupid pigeon that had made a nest above an exit sign flying around, but because of how dark Eastern State is at night, you don't see it. You just hear it. I mean, if you're looking at it, I mean, your night vision's not, most people's isn't that good to actually spot the stupid pigeon flying around. You know, because it wasn't making the cooing sounds, it was just the wings flapping with the weird echoes. Because we probably stared the bird from wherever it was hanging out, you know, every time we're walking around, you know, doing the session, you know. But until we figured out what it was like, not nerve-wracking in the sense of scary, but nerve-wracking in what the heck could this be? Because we couldn't make out, you know, heads or tails of this noise we kept hearing above us. And then you go up, if you could, on the floor, and of course you don't hear it anymore. So we all have this experience of weird you know, things that just happen on a case that's not nothing usually to do with, you know, paranormal.
Right. What's or maybe it's one of the two you've already mentioned here, but what would you say is one of the biggest ones to kind of teach others here of something that you thought was possibly paranormal? Like I say that, you know, you heard something and you're running through there saying ghost, but something that you thought may have been something that you debunked later down the road that maybe people out there wouldn't be aware of, such as the pigeon building a nest in a dark hallway.
Well, yeah. Well, with this story, I'll tell you, basically what it comes down to is when you review evidence or evaluate, whatever you want to call it, everybody that does different pieces on your team, unless it's just one or two people, like I don't know how everybody's teams are different than ours. Ours, we divide it out, obviously, to get more done. Because we have a lot of audio usually going in DVR and video footage, a lot of hours, so the more people looking at it, the better. You know, we'll try to double up
right.
on it, but, you know, we go through that way. People need to communicate. When they see something that could potentially be mistaken as something else by somebody else, they need to communicate. And I'll explain why I say that in a minute. And it also goes with equipment, knowing your equipment. We were at a hotel that was historic in Bucks County here. I'm not allowed to use the name of it, but they were under renovations when we were let in. So the whole second floor was gutted except for some rafters. So they're moving some hallways around a little bit, you know, expanding some rooms out, you know, little things to make the place better. I had a team outside investigating a little cemetery that's across the street from it because we had a little bit too many people that night because we weren't aware of how open the building was. The noise carried too much, so we divided out a little more. I got a radio call from one of the members saying they're seeing shadows up on the second floor, like shadows of people. No one was on the second floor. There was my team in the basement, another group outside, and somebody up in the attic, which is on the opposite side. The entrance attic is the opposite side where people are seeing the shadows on the second floor. I double-checked the team up in the attic. None of them were down there when they heard the call come through. I went up and walked around and looked. Nobody up on that floor. I'm wandering around. I get a call again about that they can see the shadow person. Well, I backtracked a couple seconds, and I got a call again. I saw it again. Well, now I know exactly where somebody had to be standing for them to see it, number one. Why it happened originally, I don't know. But they had recorded me at that point, you know, walking around and got that shadow person, quote-unquote, on tape as me at this time. They saw it with their eyes before I got it on video. Now, you fast forward, you know, a month or whatever as we're getting through all this stuff, and you have people looking at video footage, audio footage, you know, different types. Somebody showed me that they caught the shadow person on it, and I wasn't aware at the time that they caught me walking and got it on tape. I was just told they got it on tape. Turns out when somebody reviewed it, they knew that was me because of the timing and never said anything.
Oh, wow.
And that can be issues, obviously, when you put it out there. If you decide to put this out there saying, hey, we caught this, and your team isn't even really talking to each other about things when it comes to review, that's just not good.
Right.
Again, not paranormal. Well, the shadow person they called originally was paranormal. And, of course, the one we called on tape was not.
Okay.
That, so
it was
one of those interesting stories. We had both ends of that. And, unfortunately, it would be nice if it had been reversed. You know, we had nobody up there caught on tape, basically. But it just comes down to, you know, also talking, communicating as a team and making sure everybody's aware of what's going on at a moment. And sometimes, yeah, it's a little confusing, especially in different groups and different places, but you know, you have those pinpoint moments, I call it, like the walkie-talkie communications on both recorders then, you know, because you're hearing the conversation. That's what links everything together, you know.
Absolutely. Now, it's curious because we were just, my team got together last night and we were talking and kind of lining out what we wanted to do next year. And one on the radar, but it's a little bit distance-wise from where I'm at now in North Carolina, and I've been there during the daytime, but have never investigated it, is Eastern State. So I'm very curious about, and it's just the architecture and kind of that layout during the day with skylights, and then the lighting in there is just it's a spectacular place to see, even if you're not investigating mm-hmm. anyone that's ever in the Philly area. And the other thing that amazes me is how in town it actually is. So, you know, it's, you know, like this old castle,
not,
like, right, yeah. Just curious about overall, I guess, kind of your thoughts, and I'm going to ask you a couple questions on this, but I guess just first off, kind of your thoughts of the building itself, and any particular challenges that you ran into in investigating the location. I know you already mentioned about the sound traveling, but anything else that's kind of unique to that building investigation-wise from, like, a logistics or investigation standpoint?
Well, logistics is it is so big and so many obviously small rooms because of the cells that you can't really ever cover, like, visually that whole place. You just can't. And even running, if you pick your hotspots, quote-unquote, and you try to run cameras, you're still talking, you know, hundreds of feet of cable sometimes just to get to, like, the cell block 12, you know, upstairs. It's crazy. I mean, we had just got our DVR system. We ran out of cable, even though I bought extensions for it just in case. We ran out of cable trying to get it to certain places that we wanted it at. So it's a lot to figure out, like, how you're going to go about it. I mean, audio is easy for places. You can just set it somewhere, you know, walk away.
Right.
On that video, it's hard. It is, especially if you use the rotunda in the middle as a base station. You're still talking a lot of feet, you know, down a hallway just to even get a hallway shot. I mean, so you have to really know what you want to do and distances and plan out that if you're talking about, you know, putting video at that place. Beyond that, I mean, Eastern State is at night is very beautiful. It's very quiet, I mean, obviously, at the walls. I mean, most we heard at night from the outside world was occasionally some music from a higher-up apartment building window that somebody was cranking, you know, at night. And then a bass from a car occasionally would go by. If it was high enough, you'd hear the, you know, the thump, bump, and that's it. Beyond that, you don't even know you're in Philly at night.
Wow.
It's so quiet, and it is so eerie and beautiful in the same way because it has that haunted house feel when you look down a cell block and you can only see, you know, five or six cells down, and it's just darkness. And you might see a pinpoint of light at the end, depending on the night, you know, that goes outside. So it definitely has freaky moments just from that alone. But that also kind of helps you, too, when you're doing, you know, audio work that you kind of know where sounds are bouncing from, because even if you're in the middle of a hallway, typically that sound doesn't bounce all the way back to the rotunda. Into the next area, because the way Eastern State set up that star type pattern, it does kind of keep the audio in just that hallway as much as it echoes, which is, it's a weird concept for, because usually stuff echoes, it echoes everywhere, and this, it does, but it stops kind of.
Hmm. Yeah, now the other thing too, and I forget, you know, only being there once, I forget the certain names and things, but outside of the rotunda and all the cell blocks you have going off there, if I remember right, you know, the area where Death Row was, and the chapel area, or at least the, I believe it might have even been like the synagogue, and some of the other areas are, you know, totally outside of that rotunda structure. It's in different areas there. So, I mean, it's...
Yeah, you wouldn't even know there if you don't wander off. I mean, honestly, we had trouble finding the synagogue the first time I found it was open. It wasn't open when we investigated. It was still being renovated. When I went back a year or two later, it was actually open, and we visited it, and it was interesting. We couldn't find it at first because I didn't realize it was outside between cell blocks. I thought it was, looking at the map, like you walk down the cell block, it was right there type deal. But it was, but it was the opposite side of an entrance. So... It is a maze, to say the least, and if you've been there enough, you probably know it, and if you haven't, it is, thank God they have the guide to show you, because you wouldn't necessarily get lost, but you wouldn't find what you're looking for.
Now, I don't know if it was part of the rotunda, and it just you would enter it from the other side or not, but the cell block from the Ghost Hunters episode where they had that strange image up on the second floor, is that part of the rotunda, or is that a separate one?
It's right off. Yeah, it's okay. It's right off I think it's 13 or 12. I always say the cell block's wrong, so if anybody knows better in the chat room, you can correct me. But the cell block that we're talking about, which was built in the 1900s, is like wedged between another part of the star. So there's like two cell blocks that are going, you know, away from it, and then that's jammed in the middle of it. So there's like a little cage actually built around like the triangle that where you go in from there to go to that cell block. So it's interesting. It's right off the rotunda, but it's not like the other ones where it's wide open to it. It's kind of just wedged in there. You can kind of walk by it and not realize that it's another cell block.
Oh, wow.
And that's where all the,
I remember,
behind the walls is and everything, as well as on those floors for their events.
Awesome. Now I'm going to quick, I think this is my co-host Tracy that's called in, so let's quick see here. Tracy, is that you? Well, let me say again, Sunday Night Dead, who are we talking to?
Yeah, it's me, Matt.
Okay, okay. I always, you know, I think I have the numbers memorized now, and then I always, I'm afraid I'm going to go ahead and, you know, get somebody's name wrong here. So, Tracy is out of Florida, John, and is one of our co-hosts here on Sunday Night Dead. So, Tracy, John, John, Tracy. And, I wanted to say, just when we did the day tour, and, you know, I was just kind of scouting this out just to see what it would be like, and I wish I would have had, like, a recorder or something, because we did have, little did I know that basically you can just kind of, it's a self-guided tour, you can just kind of, like, wander around the place, and we had some strange things, minor, but kind of just that heavy feeling in certain spots that I wish, you know, I had a recorder with me at the time, but, yeah, we went through it all, and it was in the summer, and it was hot, and we thought we were pretty much done. And then we get outside of basically the rotunda area, and that's when we realized, looking at the map and stuff, that there was all these other extra, you know, the whole death row thing. And I don't remember them all, but I remember there was a bunch of things, the greenhouse. There was a bunch of things kind of outside of that main loop to check out as well. So it is, again, one of these just huge, huge complexes.
And there's a lot
all,
that's
I mean,
not
being
even
restored.
Yeah, there's a lot that's not even open to the public right now. Like, there's, I believe it's the mechanic shop, they call it. There's another bigger building that's over in there. Basically, it's only used for, like, when movie sets come through, like Transformers filmed over there. You know, you got basically people with big money can get into those sections because they're really just not ready for the public.
Okay.
But Eastern State does a great job of every year opening up something different and starting another project and working on things to keep the place not just alive, but, you know, looking good, too, and usable for the public. And it's amazing because not a lot of places that are historic like that that try that don't seem to have quite the vision that whoever, you know, makes those decisions for Eastern State does. They have a very good process.
Yeah, and it's you know, I love one of my passions in this whole area is just you know, seeing these historic locations get restored, and so I love seeing that. It's a really incredible location. Now, from a investigation standpoint, I know you know, everybody's experiences are different. I know even from doing, you know, repeat ones to places. It's one of the reasons why I love. I always say kind of depth over breadth. You know, I love going to places multiple times to kind of learn more about the patterns and the experiences in the area. But, you know, you get different experiences each time. But your experiences there, what were some of the more active parts of the penitentiary?
Well, basically, again, I don't remember the cell block names and numbers just because there's
totally
I was there like once. I think that was the first time I was actually Eastern State when we investigated it. Like, I never was even there before. So I only knew the basics walking in. But in one of these cell blocks, we were doing an EVP session in a random cell. You know, we just picked one, sat down, and decided to do some EVP work. I know I heard classical music playing very, very softly in the cell block, and I couldn't place where it was coming from, and it wasn't, you couldn't hear it outside the door, you couldn't hear it, you know, on either side of the cells next to us. I had somebody walk outside while I was hearing it, get behind us in the courtyard, they couldn't hear anything, but it was just in that cell block. And of course, it's not on audio. Go figure, right?
Yeah.
And I heard it a couple times. No one else heard it. Later on in the night, we came back to a different cell block. I started to hear it again. I just didn't say anything, and I watched one of my other members, well, I shouldn't say members, he was joining us potentially as a team member. It was like a trial run. He was listening to something. I could see because he cocked his head and was kind of listening. And I saw the look on his face. He was hearing what I was hearing. He just didn't say anything yet. And I kept asking. I said, you hearing something? And he goes, no. But I could tell he was. He just didn't want to sound like he was crazy. And I'm just like, you know, I went back to what I was doing, and I'm still hearing it. And I'm like, and he wanted to say something. You could see that, like, you know, he was going to say something and just didn't say it. Like, he didn't know how to say it. And I finally just looked at him. I said, do you hear something? And he goes, it's like the damn classical music, because you hear that. And I'm like, yes. I'm like, that's what I heard earlier. Because he was doing the same thing I was doing. He got out of the cell, listened, didn't hear, came back in. I could tell he heard it. It was the weirdest thing. I even asked the tour guides if that's ever happened before, and they didn't really know. It didn't sound familiar to them. You know.
Interesting.
I've never heard music like that before. Like classical, soft. Like almost like somebody was playing it next door to you. You know what I mean? It was weird.
Well, let's let me quick. I have a follow up on that, but let me very quick. We have a caller in here, so area code 203. Welcome to Sunday Night Dead.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, who are we speaking with?
My name is Dan. I'm coming from, and I'm calling from Connecticut.
Hey, Dan.
Hi. Okay, just to let you guys know, my servicing is, like, really, really low right now, so if I lose you during the middle of the conversation, I'm sorry for that, just ahead of time.
It's all right. Go ahead. If you get a chance to, if we lose you and you get a chance to call back, feel free to do so, but go ahead with your question.
I'm sorry. I just called in, like, literally, like, 5 minutes, like, a little while ago. I'm not sure if this relates to your conversation that you guys were just having. But there's been, like, everyone knows that there's been so much trouble going on in the world, and people are talking about, like, world peace and stuff like that. Do you ever think there's ever going to be possibilities for that? Because with the way that the world is going with Syria and, like, military troops saying we won't fight anymore, it's just, like, it seems like it's never going to end. It honestly doesn't look like it's ever going to end.
Okay, you know this is a paranormal and kind of ghost show, right?
Oh, okay. Oh gosh, I'm so
world peace is certainly a very worthy topic here. I think we're a little we're a little more late in the entertainment thing here, as my poor friends would say here.
Oh gosh, I'm sorry. Actually, no, you said you work with paranormal, such as, like, spirits and stuff like that, right?
It's a show about that, so yeah.
Okay. You know how some people say, like, when you tell a spirit to go away, they go away, right? What are you supposed to do when that spirit comes back, though?
Well, that's a, there's all different kinds of, Well, you know what? I'll just see here quick. I'll give mine, and then I'll give my my guest here a chance to weigh in if you would like to. There's different beliefs and there's different belief systems as to, you know, even what we're dealing with and what's going on here on that. So it's not like there's a tried and true way to get rid of things on this.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say a lot has to do with your own personal beliefs. If you believe that something will remove something, 9 chances out of 10, you're not going to experience the things before. If you go ahead and kind of go through the motions on something, it's a good chance that it's not going to work. So I think it has a lot more to do with your own energy. But again, that's even assuming that we are interacting with things. Again, part of this, who knows what we're dealing with and what we're not. John, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you on that completely, actually. It's all about your faith and what you're putting back out. If you believe it, it's going to happen, and if you don't, it's not. And that's not just with dealing with spirits, it's your own life. If you don't believe in what you're doing, you're never going to succeed.
I guess the best way to say it, Dan, is, you know, if you're a atheist, a Catholic ritual is probably not going to do you any good. If you're a Catholic, a pagan ritual is probably not going to do you any good, because a lot of it has to do with your own internal beliefs and the energy related to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Like, I don't really have a sort of religion. Like, I know that there's a higher being, but that's it. I am a psychic, so I do know about the other things such as other dimensions, the Merkaba, and other things like that. But I don't really have my own set of religion on that. I just thought there was a higher being, so.
All right, good. Well, thank you very much for calling, Dan.
All right, thank you.
All right. And my guest co-host, the girl of few words, Shaylin, my daughter, is on again. So hello, Shaylin.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
All right. Well, back to Eastern State. I did have a follow-up here for John just to get your thoughts on this. You talked about the music, and we've talked about this before where, you know, you have the whole EVP phenomenon where you don't hear something and something's picked up on a recorder, and then the opposite, which you're just kind of describing here, and I know I've had myself personally where you have an audible voice or an audible sound and you have the recorder right there and it's not picked up. And some of these things, like the music you're describing, you know, multiple people hear and still it doesn't get picked up on the recorder. Have you experienced that beyond the classical music? And two, just kind of curious as to your thoughts as to what could be going on there with that.
Well, I have had that happen with not music, but we were at a private home and we were doing an investigation, and all of us that were sitting in the room, including the owner of the home, with the recorders, you know, in the room on me, and there's one in the hallway near us, we all heard somebody say, "I'm here." Female. Like, clear as day. But the thing that's funny is we all heard it come from a different direction, and none of our recorders picked it up.
Oh, wow.
The homeowner, to say the least, was a little freaked out because he wasn't expecting actually to hear anything. You know, he was expecting, like most of the time when we do cases, you know, we'll show you stuff later. There'll be nothing going on necessarily while we're there that, you know, will be of interest. And that was the first time I ever had that happen. And it's interesting that you have people in a circle in a room basically sitting down and everybody tells you the noise came from a different place.
Huh.
It's almost like it was dead center of us in a way. And it just was crazy. It was the best way I could call it because none of the recorders picked it up. Not even a faint sound, nothing. Now, as for why, well, I mean, I guess you have two options here, really. I mean, you have the one that the more general, unscientific one is that the spirit didn't want to be recorded, which you can't ever prove necessarily, you know, right now. Or you have the other one that it's possible that the best description I've heard is that, you know, my friend called it harmic vibrations, basically saying that the frequency that the spirit was on was just enough to come into our world and talk, but not enough to actually be affected by, like, the recorders and pick it up. And that's, and again, I mean, that's something science probably could prove in theory, but that's beyond my pay grade, as the saying goes. I'm not a scientist in that regard. I'm not one to understand much about quantum physics, except that quantum physics in theory can explain everything some way if you can figure it out.
No, it makes sense. Pam in the chat room asked, when you're doing the investigation of Eastern State, how many people were in your group at the time? How many people were in the penitentiary?
Penitentiary, we had, I believe it was six of us, I believe.
Okay.
So
any other
minimum is 10, but you end up paying for your extra spots. I believe that's how that works for Eastern State, just an FYI for anybody.
Okay. I've seen that at some other places as well that, you know, you can just pay for the extra positions there. Any other interesting spots or places of note when you were there investigating that time?
Well, when we were in the women's cell block, I think I got whistled at from the top cell in that cell block with nobody else there besides us. And the only other female present the whole night was our tour guide, and nobody in the group did it. So Crystal would talk to himself, and it was just one of those things that definitely, the sound definitely came from above us. Now, again, that could be an echo effect because I didn't actually see anybody whistle. Nobody said they did whistle, but, you know, one of those interesting moments of like, okay, you got a women's cell block, you're a guy, and you're heading out and you get whistled at. All right, you know, this is a prison. And that's the only thing that was a women's cell block because I asked. I mean, like I said, I'm not familiar with that building like 100%, but I had to ask who we were at because of reference, and of course, there you go.
Cool. Now, I think you mentioned this earlier, but just to clarify, because I'm seeing it in the chat room again, questions about this, because it is right in the middle of the city, the noise contamination. I believe you mentioned earlier that it is, even though you're in the middle of the city with the walls and everything, it is very quiet, with that exception of mm-hmm. the high window apartment blasting music. But that, you know, I mean, you're not picking up the cars or the sounds of the city while you're in that complex.
Not
right?
at all. I mean, not at all. Basically, if you've been there, you understand this better. If you haven't, there is only one way to walk in the Eastern State. There's a giant gate with a door, a small door. You walk through that. Now, once you're through that, there's a whole, like, there's rooms that are blocking off the gate section now. So that section isn't even open anymore. So basically what you're talking about is thick walls all the way around Eastern State. And I think it's an office area now for Eastern State business end right at the cell gate along with the gift shop and everything else. So when you're talking about noise, there's nothing getting through from street level into Eastern State, period. Even during the day when you walk around, you don't really hear traffic outside or anything because it's that, you know, the walls are that thick. I mean, it is a castle prison, basically, is the best way to describe it. It's you're not getting out of that without somebody letting you out.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like, I mean, the best description, if you ever see the pictures of this or anything on it, is it just it's just like a giant castle or fortress. I mean, you know, very, very high, very, very thick walls. It is really a very, very interesting place. And then you also mentioned that the echoes in there, you had a unique echo profile in the location, but it wasn't anything that would be disruptive to investigating, was it?
No, it's just one of those deals. Once you kind of get used to, like I said, that if you're in a cell block, that you will have an echo in the block you're in, you kind of learn what's what from that. And it's only certain ones, too, I might add. Like the one that was built in the 1900s for ghost hunters caught that cigarette running or whatever, and we're, you know, up to the camera and backing off. Like, that one doesn't really have much of an echo. It's just the way it's designed. That the sound just travels and it's like normal, you know. The older cell blocks, well, a lot of them have, you know, some echo effect to them, depending, you know, on a lot of things. Like, is it a two-level only one? Is it a one-level one? You know, all the little things that go into businesses, places. It's just all these little factors come together to form what a building is and that footprint of either, you know, I can't think of the word I want to use right now, but the uniqueness of these buildings. They all have different pieces to them, no matter how old they are, how new they are.
Oh, wow. Any place in that building, I'm assuming, because, you know, certain areas, you know, you get that feel, you know, some areas feel more comfortable than others. Was there any certain part of that building that just made you feel very uncomfortable, you know, like the last place in that location that you would want to just kind of hang out by yourself for a couple hours?
No, actually, not really. I didn't really ever get a feeling of uncomfortableness or creepiness or even just, hey, hang here. It didn't really strike me as that when we were there. The only area I wanted to investigate, which I kind of forgot about because Eastern State's so big, it was Al Capone's cell. And because we were so busy in other areas, by the time I actually got around to finding his cell, it was near the end of the night. But to me, that area had some energy to it that I thought would be interesting. I just didn't get a chance to expand upon that the night we were there, unfortunately. But I just think the whole place has a vibe to it, generally speaking, and it's just, you just go and see what happens.
Ah, cool. Now, were you able to get in the infirmary wing?
No, that was still locked down when we went.
Okay.
I do believe it is open now for the haunted attraction. Whether it gets opened up for the normal tours or not, that's another story for them.
Okay.
But at one point it was completely shut down. So I guess that's a step in the right direction for, like I said, more pieces of that facility being opened to the public.
Right. Yeah, I want to say it was 3 or 4 years ago when I was there, and it was still closed off, and it wasn't as rough as some of the cell blocks. I mean, some of the cell blocks looked, like it would be rather treacherous even if you could get in there, just with how it was all laid out, but
definitely
wasn't open yet. So, just always the whole medical thing combined with the prison piece, just would be very intrigued as to what the kind of activity in that area was as well. Tracy, I've done a whole lot of talking here. Any questions or anything you'd like to add?
I'm sorry, John. When did you go in there?
Eastern State, I was there in 2009.
In 2009, you haven't been back since?
About a year. Well, I guess 2 years ago, we stopped back on a daytime tour, and that was it.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't in the same, when you went in 2009, it was to go in there and, like, do an overnighter, and then a year later you just went on a tour?
Yep, exactly, yep. And it's interesting,
well,
in, like, a year or two later.
Is to see, when you went both times, you caught the same thing both times.
Yeah, it would have been interesting. I mean, we visited everything, and, I tried to remember where we caught some of that, the music, but it's hard to, like I said, it's hard to remember. Some of the cell blocks are exactly the same.
Yeah.
So unless
right.
You know the numbers, like memorize, that happened in like 5, you're not going to be in the same area. I just know which ones it wasn't, but that doesn't help you still for what it was. And even since then, we were there, they changed a lot of stuff. Like I said, they opened up the Cinemark. It was open now compared to when we went. They had just started setting up, moving their office from across the street on Fairmont Ave to inside Eastern State. That was all done. The original walkthrough, you'd walk straight through to come in, was is where the offices were now. They cut you back to your gift shop. So a lot of stuff was a little different, too, from in 2 years from when I was there last as well.
Right. When you were talking earlier that you heard classical music,
mm-hmm.
Was it, when you heard it, was it, did it sound like it came from a record player or just like somebody sitting down playing classical music on a piano or something?
I would go more with like a radio record player type deal than somebody physically playing it. It was so soft that it almost sounded like, a radio we play, like almost if a radio was playing in a cell. Like
right.
At night, for example, like when we were there, just enough that for you to hear, but not enough that anybody coming through would be like, turn that off. Guards wouldn't affect you with it. It was very low. I mean, like it's almost if you made a noise, you lost the sound, how low it was.
Yeah, I hear you. Did any chance on recognizing what song it may have been?
I'm not that good, no. I wish I knew what it was, because if I knew it was like, Beethoven something, yada yada, you would at least have an idea of what year you're talking about, as far back as it can go, But I don't know. I wish we had it on audio, then we could figure that out, but it's, again,
right.
One of those things we heard and not recorded.
Well, I'm even thinking anyone out there that, is hearing this and might be going there to investigate at all. It might even be worth just on you know, the cell phone playing some classical music in some of the wards, and just seeing if that elicits any activity in its own right. I mean, even if it's not the right or the same piece, I'm just wondering if that wouldn't draw or instigate any type of activity in the area. And I don't think, you know, honestly, until you told me that story, you know, the first thing that wouldn't come to my mind in a prison was, you know, to go in there and play classical music. So very interesting. If anyone does get to try that and they get any interesting results, please follow up and let us know what ends up happening. So you've done private you'd mentioned some private investigations, you know, about how much your kind of breakdown between doing private homes and or businesses and historic locations. What's about the breakdown? Are you primarily private investigations or kind of these historical ones, or kind of how does your team break it down?
Well, we don't really have a breakdown per se. I'd have to actually look at the cases to do a percentage, but we go out and just find places to investigate or wait for stuff to come to us. Like, private homes typically come to us, you know, through people we know or whatever. Most of the locations, like Eastern State, obviously, you just go schedule and, you know, you set up and go do. And some of the other places we've gone, we just, you know, we found out, you know, the stories about them and gone and did the legwork to get in. A few places we've done, we're one of the few groups allowed to go in because we, you know, I guess we did something the owners liked, you know.
Interesting.
You just have to get your groundwork and be honest with people. And this is the one thing I'll tell anybody listening that has a team. If you go to a place, like a restaurant, anything that sells food, and you come in, don't buy anything, basically ask for the owner, and then the owner tells you, no, I'll think about it, and then you just leave, you just showed the owner that you really don't care about the place. You didn't spend any money.
Right.
Spend some money. Buy a meal.
Yeah, yeah.
Trust me, they'll remember you more. And if you have a business card, make sure they have a business card. Because, you know, sometimes owners do get busy and they forget who they talk to. Especially
right.
If you're the eighth group that came in that day. You know, no offense to your group, you may not stick out enough to, you know, for them to remember you. So, you know, support your business that, you know, you want to get into. I'm not saying kiss their ass, but just support the business. You know, it's good. Good karma.
No, absolutely. That's great advice. Now, I've heard a lot about, and John, who I believe is in the, John's in the chat room. I've heard a lot of, up in that area about just kind of things being very territorial and groups trying to kind of lock down locations to the exclusion of others. What's kind of been your experience there on that? Have you run into issues with that, or has it been pretty smooth for you?
I've ran into some issues, and some of it's just the best way to describe it is people are afraid of losing their place. And for some reason, I don't understand why, because like I said, it comes back to most of these, unless you have a contract signed with an owner, the owner decides who comes in and investigates. If they're trusting you to, you know, oversee these groups coming in, hey, fine. But it doesn't mean that the groups coming in have to do it your way. They do it the way the owner wants. The owner puts limits, that's the rules, not the investigators, you know, that are running it for the owner. I think some of the times that's where the problems come in because, as you know, groups do things differently. We don't all do it the same way. We probably never will, and that's the best part about the field is that we challenge each other in that regard to move forward. So you have a lot of those issues. And you have also people who just, because they're getting paid to do these places, will do whatever they can and not lose that in a negative way sometimes. They don't probably mean to, but they do.
Yeah. Well, it even gets down to, I think, you know, it's one thing if the owner's interested and, you know, wants the extra investigation, you know, and kind of detail into the place. But, you know, there's a certain, I think particularly with these groups competing over the private areas, you know, in general, these are people that are experiencing uncomfortable issues. And, you know, it's not, it's it's not a market, so to speak. It's, you know, people that for the most part need help. And so, you know, people kind of fighting over and getting kind of territorial over the ability to help someone, just in a lot of respects doesn't really sit right with me. And I agree with you on our private ones. It's people that come to us for help. I mean, that's not, you know, we view it as, you know, you certainly don't want to use a person's home and things like that for a laboratory. So as far as research work and things along that line goes, you know, we do that in either the historical locations or just general controlled areas. And if someone needs help and approaches us, that's more of a service to help get them answers. But, you know, we're not out there trying to get into people's houses, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of properties that I know of that have history and haunted history in this area that I know I cannot touch because, well, one, they're either private homes, which you're not going to go door-to-door asking about that. If you do, I think you're an idiot, you know. But and then the other part of it, sometimes you have businesses that are maybe more religious-based that own a section of property. And they typically, some of them, unless they, you know, choose to work with groups, they won't go out of their way to let you in, and they also won't let you come to them. You know, it's the same idea. You have to let things be. Like, you can go to a restaurant for a private case, you know, like commercial or whatever, and go, hey, you know, we want to talk to you about this. And most of the time people talk to you about it. When it comes to investigating, well, that's a whole other issue.
Right.
Because obviously that's after hours, that somebody has to be there. You know, yada, yada, it's not that simple. I mean, private investigations are so much simpler because you're dealing with the homeowners usually or, you know, the renters, whatever, and you just move forward quickly. Businesses and other things that don't offer it that you're hunting down, yeah, it's a lot more legwork, but it's worth it, I think, in the long run. So at least you get to see some of these places. Like, I've been given tours of places that they won't let us investigate, but they gave us a tour of it. I've seen stuff the public doesn't see.
Cool.
You know, so you just have to take the positives with it. Even though you're not investigating it, you get to see some stuff, and at least you got your foot in the door.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the one piece that I think some people lose, you know, in being kind of short-sighted on some of this is some of these connections, you never know where that'll lead down the road. So, you know, even if it matters, being that owner doesn't want any tours there, but they get in contact with somebody else through, you know, business or something. And if you made a good enough impression on that, who knows? I mean, that could lead to something else. Or, you know, the story could change 2 or 3 years down the road, and if you made a good enough impression, you could be the one to get in there to do the work. So I totally
exactly.
Agree on that. Well, top of the hour, anyone that knows, always take a quick break here. For me personally, to get a drink so I don't lose my voice. So when we get back in the second hour, if anyone in the chat room or anyone out there wants to call in with any specific questions for John, otherwise we'll get into John's thoughts on a couple of the issues out there in the field. We'll be back in about 4 minutes. You're listening to Sunday Night Dead. Talking anything heavy like world peace here, but we do have our ghosts and anything related that you want to talk about here on Sunday Night Dead. Vincent there, I don't know if he's ticked or not. He hasn't been on in a couple weeks, even though he's back from sabbatical. So hopefully I get Vincent on with us next week. So, John, just quick kind of kick off the second hour here. You have a event coming up soon. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure thing. We're running an expo, a paranormal expo, of course, being a paranormal group here, that's presented by Midnight Watchman, which is my paranormal group, and ParanormalDictionary.com, which is another project I set up a while ago, which is basically a Wikipedia version of the paranormal, since anybody who uses Wikipedia will realize that most paranormal groups and things are not notable enough for Paranormal Dictionary, well, for Wikipedia, so it would get removed. On our end, Paranormal Dictionary, pretty much anything to do with paranormal is there. Terms, places, people, groups, locations, you know, you name it, it should be there. And we're always adding to it. It's what I call a paranormal unity project because, well, people are working together indirectly, which is always good. But the expo is Paranormal Journeys. It's in Lansdale, PA, which is in Bucks County here, and September 21st and 22nd, if you go to midnightwatchman.com and look up Paranormal Journeys, all the information is there, and if you go to paranormaldictionary.com, put in Paranormal Journeys, all the information is there. So we hope to see some people out there from different areas. I'm not sure how far your radio show reaches, but we're still looking for, obviously, as many attendees as we can, from not just paranormal groups, but fans and people interested.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, as far as reach, we're kind of, and anyone with an internet connection can get us, so we get things from all over the place. So very, very interesting. And we will, Tracy, I don't know if you get a chance, if you can put up the Midnight Watchman's link on the chat room, and if not, we'll get it up on the Sunday Night Dead Facebook page later on today. But very good.
I think
go ahead, sir. It's on there? Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I missed it going through the feed there. Well, speaking of the whole unity thing, John, because it's certainly a hot button issue, at least with some people. It's not with me. I guess I'll preface this by my view on this is as long as no one is doing anything illegal, harming anyone, or damaging any property. My theory is let everybody go out and do their thing, and we learn from people trying different things, and the things that don't work, the things that are goofy and all the sideshow stuff won't last very long, and it's better to not pay attention to it than feed it a whole lot of energy and drama. But I know some other people feel very differently about that. What's your overall thought on the whole para-unity and the inverse of that, the para-drama that's out there?
Well, we're always going to have drama. I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of community you're in. You're going to have drama, disagreements. It happens. But the paranormal unity, I call it problem, is not the fact that people work together or, you know, like you said, learn from each other. It's the ones that will do things that are ridiculously bad, like bash somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And just because, you know, they're fans or somebody else that's kind of in the field, hobby, you know, study, whatever you want to call it, backs up this person, and just because of it uses paranormal unity as that this flag, when really you're just bullying people and you're using it as an excuse to do it, instead of, you know, somebody looking at that and going, you know, okay, that's between them, I'll leave that be, or going, hey, this is, you're wrong, you know. It's, we all debate. I mean, look at orbs. People
yeah.
debate that all the time still, whether you believe it or not, or, and there's starting to be some, I call it subcontext to these orb debates now, which I think is good, because that means people are looking into it enough to start to reach, you know, what they really could be besides just moisture, dust, you know, yada, yada. And I think that's good, because it's talking, and you figure things out. I mean, you're not going to agree on everything. You just won't. I mean, what about religion? Religion doesn't even agree on everything between different styles. And why are we going to, as a paranormal group, that's the groups don't agree on everything? It's just not going to happen. But as long as you respect others' views and try to help them to see the quote-unquote truth of what you're doing, you're fine, as long as you can respect that they don't agree with you. And that's not what happens enough, unfortunately, is that respect part and agree and disagree, basically.
No, I agree. I mean, it really is, you know, respect is key. And, you know, one thing I always say on this is, you know, we're dealing with 99.9% of what we're dealing with here is theory. There's very little here that has been proven, and people have proof on a lot of the things that we're looking at. I would, you know, love to see it and love to talk to them on this, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's really just opinions. And I know we got some gigantic egos out there that feel their opinions trump everybody else's, but, you know, again, at the end of the day, it's really clashes of people's opinions here, and that's why I just let people do what they do. And you know, if there's something to the work that people are doing, it will gain momentum. And if there really isn't anything to it, it won't last long. And so better to just not get knocked off your game by getting embroiled in this stuff over something that you know, may go away in 2 months, because you know, it is severely flawed in what's being done. But again, mm-hmm. I kind of keep an open mind on this. Tracy, what are your? I know we've talked about this before, but so I want to give your chance to weigh in on this.
Well, I agree with both of you. I really do. You know, paranormal unity, what exactly is it? You know, my personal feelings on it is this. I'm not saying that this is going to be a must-have, but for everybody to hold hands, sing kumbaya, and be done with it. But I think it's going to take the combination of all the data that a lot of teams have gathered to actually prove the existence of spirits, ghosts, the paranormal, period. So if that means paranormal unity, then so be it.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up pulling data. This is something I've noticed in this area, at least, and the people I've had contact with the paranormal. I don't know much down about your way, Matt, but evidence peer review doesn't exist. People are too afraid of you debunking what they have to the point of not wanting to learn anything anymore. I don't know if you run into that too down your way, but that's one of the biggest, I think, hurdles we have is, again, just holding too tight to what we think we have, and instead of, you know, just showing it, basically.
Yeah, I've run into that. I've actually run into it on both ends. I've run into, because I love and welcome, you know, constructive dialogue on these things. And I put things, I don't put everything out, but I put some things out to get people's opinions. And again, I think people read into some of the things that people put out there and think that it's, hey, you know, look at me, look what I got. You know, some of it is just, you know, I'd like to get your opinion on this. I've had others where, you know, people will come in and just very matter-of-factly hear it once and go, oh, that's a, you know, that's this or that's that, not putting into context that, you know, that clip that you're putting on there is 10 seconds out of 8 hours of audio. You know, we knew the ambient noise at that time. It's not, you know, there might have been 30 other odd sounds in that recording that we ruled out because it was an ambient, you know, recurring noise that we figured was, you know, a bird hitting a window or, you know, some of these other things that are going on. So I've kind of seen it on both ends on the evidence review, but I agree. People are way too, you know, issues with people taking things, you know, some concerns over that, and then also the whole just absolutely getting bashed over things. And I've mentioned this before, John, that, you know, one of my biggest concerns with all the bashing that goes on out there is there could be somebody, you know, that could be a real contributor in this field that is really excited and just getting started. And I think, you know, all of us that work on here, we're there at one point where obviously we know more now than we did when we first started. And so maybe they make a common mistake, but they're all excited and all, you know, jazzed about working in this area. It might be their first investigation. They put something up there and have somebody just absolutely tear them apart, which I've seen some absolutely terrible things out there that, you know, people put out against people. They totally get discouraged and go, man, I don't want to deal with this crap anymore, and they leave. And here it could have been somebody that could have really been a good contributor, but because of that negative experience. And I think some of the you know, long-time investigators out there that take that approach are actually doing themselves even a disservice, because there's a lot more they could do on the mentoring side and a lot more positive impact they could have from that end than from being known as somebody that just goes around cutting everybody down.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. I really do. I mean, I've been there too, where I would help debunk, and I realized at one point that I was getting, I guess you could say, short with answers with that. Be like, that's not an orb, you know, it's not a this. And you don't actually explain anything. And I realized myself that, hey, I'm becoming one of those a-holes that I hate to see. You know, and so I made sure then that I went around and I didn't just, you know, go out and go, it's not what you think, and then walk away or call you an idiot or something dumb. You know, I'd make sure I explained to them. Like, there's a team member, another team, I should say, west of me here, had something that they thought they had a great piece of evidence. A shadow person, they said they called on camera, and after I watched it, I realized it was just them, and it's a combination of lighting from a mirror nearby and the sun being out and the way they walked up the steps during the video that created the shadow person that she said wasn't them. They canceled out light and made something different, and it's a cool effect. It really is, and it's unintentional. And she was mad at me for the longest time because they're defensive about their evidence. But I'm right. And I told them, like, if I can get this in a place where I can show you with, like, a laser pointer and in front of you, you'll change your mind. Well, you won't. But at the end, it's still your choice what you put out there, you know, no matter what I believe.
Right. Right.
I'm not going out of my way to, like target them and show, like, tell the world that, you know, so-and-so is in a bad group because they did this. Nah. You just tell them, and if they don't want to listen, they don't want to listen. But hopefully you'll plant some seeds that they'll start to learn, and they'll find it. They'll go back and get themselves and go, okay, we were wrong, you know, and move forward.
Well, that's another thing that, you know, I'll just kind of weigh in on my part of this. There seems to be this, I'll say it almost paranoia out there, that if you put something out there that then gets explained, that somehow completely destroys you. I mean, it's all part of the learning experience. Just like you said earlier that, you know, there were some things you caught on your first investigation that, you know, later on you were able to figure out what it was. That's all part of the learning process. So, I mean, you know, just because you find something that you might think is something that later on you figure out what it was, whether, you know, audio or visual, that doesn't invalidate everything else that you've done. It just means that you've learned something and actually you'll do better going forward on it. So I don't really see, you know, on both ends of this, I don't get the hyper criticism, but on some ends I don't get the incredible defensiveness either. I mean, it's all a learning process. You know, the things that I do put out, for me personally, that is the intent to learn from it. I'm not going to get, you know, totally bent out of shape if somebody thinks it's something else. But, you know, on the flip side is I at least prefer people to be respectful in how they approach it. And that's, you know, that would be my expectation all the way around and all the interactions on this.
And that is some of the problem, that people aren't respectful. You have a few people that stand together as some kind of paranormal police. And that's some of the issues. I mean, there's not just one of those types of groups. There are a bunch around, but... And it's one thing to go to somebody's Facebook and go, hey, that's not right. This image isn't this. It's another thing to have 20 people from the same group jump on the same thing and kiss each other's butts while pushing somebody down. It's just horrible. It'd be just like, you know, at your job, not just like you do one thing wrong and your boss, not just your boss yelling at you, but having, you know, his supervisors do it as well at the same time, or, you know, and your coworkers do it, and another department do it to you. There's a big difference between that. And I don't understand how that some of these groups think that helps. You know, if you want to police and go around, then fine. You go and talk to the people. You don't need everybody to do it, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, that's the one piece.
One-on-one.
Yeah. And I just want to point, K-Rat in the chat room said, you know, that he feels he has the duty when debunking evidence to provide his reasons just as the believers to provide theirs. And I don't think, at least I think on both our ends, that's not what we're, I don't want to say complaining, but that's not even what we're saying is necessarily a bad thing here. Again, I think that points to the whole discussion and learning process. I mean, again, mm-hmm. if there's things out there, you know, there's some common ones that, you know, people learn about that get mistaken for things. You know, I think if that's done respectful and that person learns from that, I think you've done a overall benefit. Again, if it's done in a nasty way, and I got to tell you, I don't know, it must be really common right now. I've seen about 4 or 5 rants out there this past week of just, you know, and I don't see any point in it other than, again, a bunch of people wanting to just bash people out there. You know, if people want to, I don't know, if people want to post a thumb smudge and, you know, say it's a ghost, you know, it does, at the end of the day, it doesn't really impact anything that I'm doing. And so, you know, if I'm asked for my opinion, I would try to help them constructively, but I don't see the need to post a very public rant to get, you know, 20 people on there bashing this person for it. But again, that's just me. John did have a point also in the chat room that some of this is just people that don't buy into the whole concept of this, just, you know, trying to less than diplomatically put some people down. So, I mean, I think that is a part of this as well.
But again, there's some of these people. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's see who we have calling in on this. Area code 954, Sunday Night Dead. Who are we speaking to?
Hey Matt, it's Todd. How you doing, John Tracy? It's good to hear you guys tonight.
Hey, Todd.
I wanted to weigh in on this topic that you're talking about because I'm going through something right now with a group that has over 850 members, and I'm not going to mention names, but they've gone so far as to contact people that know me and ask, you know, is this guy a real person? What are his credentials? You know, yada, yada, yada. If you look at their Facebook page, you know, they say that they're a peer review group. Well, peer review is done during, you know, your doctorate process. And that's where you take your data and put it on the table for your professors to assess. And they decide whether or not you're a peer to them now. This group does not offer up any expertise on why they're, you know, capable of doing this assessment. You don't ask for it; they just come to your site and take it. You know, they attack brand new groups. That's their specialty, is they go after new groups specifically and target them to try to break them down. And it's gotten to the point where, you know, I've had disgustingly child pornography posted on the page, and thank God an admin saw it after only a few minutes and deleted it, to all kinds of spam in the group. there will be a discussion, and then all of a sudden somebody will start going off on a tangent like your caller did earlier. And it's pitiful. You know, these groups are, I mean, there's people in these groups that are in their 60s, you know, predominantly 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, if you look at the members' pictures. That's pitiful. That really is pitiful. And they're the people that bitch about the youth today, you know, in going wild. And I'm just saying in general, they really need to examine themselves. It's disgusting, you know. On one of the pages, I took a picture of an old tour bus that is no longer in existence and put the GII logo on it, and I was using the metaphor, jump on the bus, join us on the bus, you know, things like that. It was strictly a metaphor. And they accused me of stealing this picture. Well, did I take it offline? Yeah, I did. You know, is the bus, you know, around anymore? No. I don't feel guilty. You know, I never said the bus was mine like they claimed. And if you went on one of their groups, you know, the guy had a picture of a female lead singer in a rock band, you know, up on stage with his initials, you know, that he photoshopped in behind it. And I'm like, wait a minute, you know, you're basically saying the band is you now. You know, what is the difference between what you just accused me of and what you're doing? And you know, these idiots in this group like to think they're elitists. They just don't get it. They really don't get it.
And they won't.
And, yeah, yeah. And the thing that really, really amuses me is I don't care how big, how bad these people think they are, they'd never say it to your face. They would never say it to your face. And my philosophy is, if I won't say it to your face, I'm not going to post it online. Because at some point, you will catch up to me. And you know, you'll have a beef with me, and rightfully so. And, you know, if I feel one way or another about you personally, I'll tell you. But I won't do it in front of a crowd to humiliate you. You know, if I don't like you, I just avoid you. And it's you know, it's scary to think that these people are parents and grandparents. You know, it's like, what kind of example are you leading? And what are you doing for the community? You know, you say that you're in the paranormal community. How do you figure? You know, I just, it's baffling, you know. What do you feel about this, John? You know, specifically, have you ever seen, like, the hardcore, you know, sociopaths activity going on?
Actually, yes, I have, and I know exactly which group she's talking about and which person she's talking about with the rock band singer. And all I can say is they have their own issues, and they, some of them have become legal issues with other people. That's how far some of these idiots have gone, and some of them hide under fake names. They're not even,
yeah.
They won't put themselves out there, but they'll go right after you, which tells me all I need to know about it.
No.
My biggest
no.
thing being in the paranormal has been accountability and honesty. Which
well,
means
let me,
if you mess up, you say you messed up.
First of all, let's watch who we're calling psychopaths. Secondly, I think, Todd, you know, I know exactly who you're talking about, too, and you're right. There's some issues. But I think as getting back on the topic, yeah, I think one of the things we all as paranormal groups should know, one of the very first things we should know, is that if you're going to post stuff online, expect to get this kind of ridicule. I think you have to know that. And you
why should you expect it? I mean, seriously, you know, why should you expect this insanity to happen?
Now, the insanity that you have going on and is totally different than, you know, in the severity level of it. Now, what we were talking about earlier with, you know, a new group's coming on and they post their first evidence and somebody goes in there and starts eating them alive, then they get all pissed off and they decide to leave the paranormal field. Well, I think that particular group, if they knew from the get-go to expect this, then maybe they could have said, well, you know, I did expect this, so let's listen to what he has to say and let's think about it. And maybe he's right, because I know for me, I don't have all the answers. That's why I rely on other people to help me with my answers.
Yeah, and I just want to weigh in here on one thing on this, because again, it is a podcast. People hear this later on it as well. You know, the intent of this show is really discussing different items in the field, and you know, we talk sometimes about the drama and the bullying things in there, but I do want to keep it on generalities here. I don't want, and I'm not saying you're doing this, Todd, or anyone else out there, but I don't want to, I've joked around before that there are a lot of shows out there, no offense to them, but that are more on the Jerry Springer side of things. We are not. I don't want to necessarily get into specific drama with teams out there. I do have my opinion, which I've said over and over and over again on here, is all this 99.9% of this is theory. So when we're talking about theories, we're really talking about opinions. I had a issue a while ago where somebody that I actually respect, but you know, we got into a quite a bit of an argument over this type of stuff. And I left that, you know, at the end of the day, it's all an opinion. And opinions, you know, I hate to say it, but opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one. And, you know, at the end of the day, I've joked around about this, but at the end of the day, if, you know, a genius out there thinks I'm an idiot, that's, again, just his opinion. And at the end of the day, that opinion only matters to the value that you give that person's opinion. I've said before also on this that I enjoy doing this. I would do this if absolutely no one else was interested, and I was completely by myself, and it just so happens that there's other people that I've met that are also interested in this, and we do this to share on that. So I hope this is a generality out there on this. I certainly don't want the show to become an instrument of adding further drama out there. I certainly get the kind of the pain and the issues that you've had to deal with there, Todd, stuff. Again, I just want to stay away out of, like, naming, you know, or even indirectly naming people on this, because, again, I really don't want to be an instrument in feeding more of this.
No, I fully understand that, and you know, I apologize if you felt that I went too close to the line. I didn't think I did. I respect what you're saying, and you know, I'm glad that you don't take sides. I wish everybody did. You know, that's you know, a very valid point. But you know, one thing that lacks with most groups is nurturing. They'll nurture within their group, but they're not willing to give the guy next to them a hand up. And I find that kind of bizarre too, because like Tracy has said in the past. And John touched on it. You know, if we shared all of the information that we had, maybe the puzzle would go together faster and easier. But you know, it's this mind meld of you know, I've got mine, you know, and stay away. It's kind of weird, but you know, it's just how it is. And again, you know, I apologize if you felt that I was getting too close to that line. Wasn't my intention, and you know, I didn't think that I was going off topic.
No, well, it was you know, again, I just wanted to be clear here. I don't, and I'm not saying that you necessarily were. I just wasn't sure where this was going, and so I just, again, I don't want to really be airing out that,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just, you know, I just you know, wanted to voice my opinion about that and see what the consensus was. That was my only intention. Is, you know, I mean, I'm certainly not going to do anything, you know, to you know, besmirch, you know, your reputation. I mean, because that's exactly what I'm talking about. So, I mean, I, you know, there's two shows that I really, you know, have grown to love and respect, and yours is one of them. So, you know, With that, I want to end it with, you know, please keep up the great work. and you know, I'm impressed by, you know, your regular panel people and your guests as well. You know, you get the creme de la creme, and it's enjoyable to listen.
Well, thank you very much, Todd. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for calling
in,
Todd.
Have a good week, guys.
Yeah,
thank you, Todd. Take care. Bye-bye.
John had pointed in really quick in the chat room, just real quick, John Coghill, about you know, that he's worked with other teams and learned a lot and interacted. I got to say, you know, through the show, and it's one of the things I've been thankful for, being able to do this show. I've met some great people through this show. You know, some have become co-hosts, like you know, Tracy, Luana, Ken and John, and others have just been great friends of the show over time. So no, I appreciate that. Now, I know we kind of went a little long there, John, so I just want to give you the chance to kind of weigh in if you had any additional thoughts on that topic.
Well, like I said, what it comes down to is accountability. I think that groups don't – I think they put – like even Todd was kind of saying that, you know, you have the accountability in your own team, but you don't really – how you react and act to other teams, you don't have the accountability then. And that's where the problem comes in too, because it's like, it's almost like okay for certain people to do this, you know, short, uneducating responses that might be considered, you know, negative, but it's not okay to go help somebody instead, you know. And these new teams, they may not know that some of this, well, catfighting, I guess you can call it, happens in the community. You know what I mean? Most of us have been around and know somebody that's in it. But some of these teams that just start up and, you know, for whatever reason, they're kind of walking into a wild west sometimes with some of this stuff. And depending on the area you're in, it's worse.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think, the problem. It's accountability. It's we don't need to teach each other. Teach each other. You know, it's not, that's all it is, teaching, knowledge.
Right.
Yeah, it's you know, on one hand, this has always been kind of my theory on this, is if somebody's doing something that I absolutely, you know, think is ridiculous, again, not illegal, not endangering anyone, just something, you know, really dumb out there, and if I would take the approach that it reflects on me, which I don't, I mean, I don't think you can, I think that knocks you off your game if you start worrying about what everybody else does, just like in a business, if you had a restaurant and you started worrying about what every other restaurant was doing, you know, it's going to infect your operation because you're worrying about other people's stuff instead of taking care of your own house. My posting it, my drawing more attention to it, isn't going to help the situation. You know, if somebody puts that thing out there and maybe they have, you know, 100, 200 people see it, that's great. If I start posting and getting it out there more, that more people see it, I'm actually feeding it more energy and making it worse than if you just kind of ignored it. So that's the one aspect of it, and it just might be my style that I don't understand with some of these things out there. You know, if you're not going to try to educate and be constructive with it, which I totally get that piece, if you're just going to get annoyed by it, I certainly wouldn't be drawing a whole lot of attention to it. I don't think that serves anybody any positive service. But again, that's just my opinion, and that's been my attitude on all of this, and why a lot of times I don't see the drama. Is again, very few of these things have been proven. I mean, you can prove for almost any of these mechanisms that get explanations to it. There's still theory and unexplained pieces of it out there. So I mean, I don't see how you can get so bent out of shape on either end, either, you know, defending what you're seeing or debunking it, if so much of this still remains out, you know, theory and unexplained. So, but again, that's just kind of my two cents in it. I try to stay positive on these things. But
well, I think you hit the nail right on the head. I really do. Very well said.
Well, thank you. John, just kind of curious, other experiences that really kind of stand out. Have you been on any investigations or any, whether, you know, public or private, where either you just had some incredible experience or something that really kind of caught you off guard or made you second guess what you were doing?
Well, I don't know if I say second guess, but it definitely opens your eyes sometimes when things happen. We investigated the orphanage out in Gettysburg, which is actually across the street from Jenny Wade. You know, we go to Gettysburg every year, so we always find something new we try to go back and do. Well, the second year out, we did the orphanage. Upon walking down to the basement, it had the most oppressive, negative feelings I've ever had on a case, ever, as soon as you walk down those steps. And the best thing I can compare it to would be like if you had two people yelling on either side of you, like at each other, not necessarily at you, but at each other, and you're just in the middle. That's kind of what it was like. Just that much negativity around you that you can't just walk away from. It's almost like, you know, you're trying to walk away and the argument's continuing around you. Not necessarily at you, but you're, you know, there when it's going on. And I had never had that happen, you know, before that or after that. But it was one of those things of, wow, this is different, you know. And it was instant. As soon as you go down the steps, it was only down in that basement that night. I've not had it happen there since, and we've been there a few years, you know, in a row, and I have not had that happen again. And it's an interesting experience, to say the least.
Oh, wow.
Now, when we did Stemmy's place, though, which is in Easton, it was on Black Horse Inn. It's been on Animal Planet's, what is that, The Haunting or The Haunting?
Oh, I got a quick jump in. That's so funny, because I was going to ask you about that one, because I used to do business lunches there before these shows came out, and I knew it had a history to it. So I was going to actually ask you about that specific location. So pretty cool. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No problem. We investigated there, and we tried Frank's boxes and those type of things out and different variations on how to, I guess, experiment with them. I don't know if they're really, you know, I mean, there's so many people that would tell you that's not good, whatever, you know, we all got different thoughts. But we did a Frank's box down in the basement. And the interesting thing about the Frank's box down there was we had cursing come through it. Repeatedly cursing. Now, as much as people try to debunk Frank's boxes, you know, as radio station chatter, yada, yada, what are the odds that you're going to consistently run into at least and, you know, an uck ending? Enough
right.
That it's, you know, it's so much there that it's, you know, even if it was a mistake and it wasn't really the F word, to hear even, you know, just the uck part of it, enough, what are the odds, you know?
Right.
And upon reviewing the audio from Frank's box, we picked up a lot of stuff that we didn't even notice was being said, you know, at the time. And when you piece it together, it's kind of a sad story because there's a waitress that used to work there that was actually killed, beaten to death by her boyfriend. She died on property. The Frank's box, when you listen to it, there's a lot of the cursing. You have a woman's voice that sounds to us like, please don't hurt me. And then you have this going on, you know, and the owner's name's mentioned near the end. It's almost like it replayed that event out with some other stuff mixed in. Like, he had also a lot of references to IM6 when questions were asked. I don't know what that means. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
There's all kinds of possibilities there. I mean, but we couldn't figure that part out. The rest all seemed to fit that story, which we weren't even aware of till later that night, fully. So it's an interesting case because the whole time that was going on, it definitely felt like energy swirling around us is the best way to call it, describe it. Almost like the you ever been in a fight in high school or a school or been around one where you see everybody gathers around and watches?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like that type of moment, except there's just a couple of us in the basement that we could physically see. It was a weird situation, a lot of energy, though, the best way to describe it.
Oh, wow. Now, I'll just add, you know, I was initially skeptical on the box, and what I do a lot of times on these things, and again, I view it, even the work that I'm doing, I don't think view any of it as necessarily definitive. I view it all as kind of a work in progress, and we learn as we go. And so some of these, you know, controversial ones and things, I will still run alongside other instruments and things just to see, you know, just to see what we get and just to see if there's any odd things. And Tracy, in your chat room on Thursday, we had mentioned, I thought it was pretty cool that an odd thing, and again, I'm not a believer in the phone things, but every once in a while I'll go ahead and run one just to see, you know, what we get, you know, looking to see if we get a EVP that matches the word that comes through. And just an odd thing that we had happen at South Pittsburgh once was we were in a room, we didn't know at the time that it was the bereavement room, and we got this Frank, Helen, blood, flowers, you know, just things along that line, which we thought was interesting. We just made note of it. Well, what was odd is we came back in that room 3 hours later and again got Frank, Helen, blood, flowers. So, again, not saying there was definitely something to it, just noted it as being interesting. Well, in this chat room show Thursday night, we were talking with somebody else from that did an investigation in South Pittsburgh and got Frank and Helen, I believe it was on a spirit box in that exact same room. So, again,
yep.
I don't know. I'm not saying it's anything definitive, but why I even bring it out there is anyone going into South Pittsburgh, hang out in that bereavement room and use those words as a trigger and see if you get more, and maybe we can build on something out of that.
Yeah, it's worth a shot. I mean, if you try a few questions or something, it's not, you know, there's times, I mean, I'm sure you've done it where you're asking questions and you're like, huh, what do I want to say next? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if a team goes out and tries three questions extra that they already know they want to ask, it saves them a little bit of trouble. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tracy, I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add on that or not, but it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I don't know. I really don't have anything to add. I really wish I could have seen it, though, you know?
Yeah, it was... It's pretty interesting. The other thing, John, that, you know, we used to joke around with this every once in a while on the show. I did something called Ghost or Host, and when you're talking about the probability of getting those words, that's something that I've experimented with in that, you know, if you're going to take one word that comes through out of a conversation, so take a you can take a newspaper, you can take, you know, a Facebook feed, you can just pick up a book, and go ahead and ask a question and just hit kind of a random number and pull, you know, one or two words out of that text and see how often you get anything remotely like, you know, even just a number, even just, you know, getting a number out of things and stuff. And so, again, not saying that everything that comes through there is, you know, paranormal, but there is a certain element that you got to look at the probability of getting things. Yes, every once in a while, you're probably going to, if you're going to get one word, it might end up being a number or a name. But if you're getting things consistently over and over again, you got to at least factor into the probability of keeping, you know, having that continue to happen.
Yeah.
Matt, you're talking about.
And then there's more. Yeah.
Go ahead, Tracy.
I'm sorry. You're talking about the obelisk?
I was talking about the spirit box, the one that goes through the radio waves.
Yeah, yeah, okay, but, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the obelisk. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so just the probability on that. A good example, I did a private one recently where, and it was funny, two separate times there, we had it running and got the same voices, two different people. In there, and again, the one person in this one area did not like me, and so, you know, my name would come through with some colorful words behind it, the F-bomb thrown around, you know, over and over and over again, and so, again, looking at the probability, I mean, there could have been a chance that there was somebody on a phone nearby throwing the F-bomb left and right to somebody named Matt, but... Again, just kind of looking at the odds of that happening. So, again, just interesting things. Not saying it's all definitive. We work in the kind of the realm of theory here. But I know we're getting kind of towards the end here, John, so I wasn't sure if there was any topic in particular you wanted to kind of weigh in on here or any thoughts on anything that we covered over this time that you wanted to weigh in on.
I don't think so. I mentioned the expo, which is one of my big things, obviously, I'm pushing. Paranormal Dictionary is one of the other projects I'm working on. There isn't too much else that I I haven't even seen lately online that, you know, is like a sticking point for me or anything. I mean, I haven't seen as many posts about orbs lately myself on any of my feeds or stuff I look at, or even like the ghost photo apps from phones. I haven't really seen anything that's caught my interest, I guess you could say, lately.
And I have to say, for anyone that might be listening to this for the first time, all our orbs thing here is a big running joke on the show. So we even at Super Bowl time have Zombie Bowl, where we have the kind of like a takeoff of Bud Bowl, if anyone remembers that from the 80s, where we have the zombies and orbs play each other. So it's all kind of meant in good humor, our little history here with the orbs. Curious, but bucket list. Bucket list locations, John. Anything high up on there?
I mean, Eastern State for, you know, most of my life is that, and I finally got to go there, obviously, just a couple of years ago. And I'm actually having my group work on that right now for one of our pieces for the website. And everybody's having trouble picking places because a lot of us are in the same mindset of, you know, there's places we want to do, but they're not necessarily like must-do bucket list places. But I think for me, it's an interesting place just to do an investigation. I always go back to either Stonehenge just because I'd like to see if there's anything different because of energy there. Not necessarily haunted or anything, but just because of the energy and the history and the unknown of what that Stonehenge really was for. I think it'd be fun doing an investigation. I don't necessarily think there's anything there, but, you know, just to see it itself would be amazing. Either that or some of the pyramids, again, because we're not really sure what they're for. As much as we think we know, we really don't know.
Right. You know, one other point I wanted to quick put out here is I had written a piece, I might have to post it on here again, about there's something in statistics called kind of alpha and beta risk, and it's one way to view it is kind of where you want to draw the line between guilty before proven innocent or innocent before proven guilty. And really, you know, I think one of the things that drives a lot of the drama out in this field is where people put those lines and taking wherever you put your line and applying it to everybody else. You know, at the end of the day, not everybody is out here, you know, trying to do this as like a doctoral thesis. And I think some people get ticked off. There are people out here that are doing this strictly out of entertainment and getting a kick out of it. And, you know, my own personal opinion, if no one is getting hurt by that, or you're not doing anything illegal or breaking into people's houses and stuff, or causing mental problems by going into people's places and telling them they have demons, you know, so be it. So I think that's another cause of some of the drama here too, is to where you draw the line on these things. And so just another point that I wanted to add to that.
No, that's a good point. I mean, it's the old ghost hunter versus investigator debate.
Yeah.
You know, some people there's no difference. Some people there is.
Exactly. Any advice you'd give to somebody new just starting out, John?
Well, basically, be respectful is number one. And number two, no matter what equipment you buy, really look into and understand how it works, what it does, what it doesn't do, and be aware of that. I mean, look at a K2 meter and some of these ghost meters. They're sensitive to RF and walkie-talkies and other things like that. We all have to know, if we use this, where its limits are, because no device is, you know, a Ghostbusters EKG meter. You know what I mean?
Right.
You don't have anything specifically designed for this. So as long as you understand your equipment and what it does, doesn't do, how it reacts to everything else, including your other equipment, you'd be so much better off in understanding really what's going on in a place more than not.
Absolutely. Totally agree. Tracy, what do you have coming up?
Well, actually, this coming up Sunday, we're going back to the Coombs house where we had that stuff thrown at us. We're going back there. But I want to, this past Saturday, we had a real good opportunity. One of our favorite places, the Russ house, is up for sale, and it's killing me that it's up for sale, because I'm so afraid somebody, some rich guy, is going to buy it and just tear it down, turn it into a 7-Eleven. so worried about that. But we were approached by some people out of Kentucky, and they shared my same concerns, and they sent a TV crew down here. And it was all about the Russ House Saturday and Saturday night. They allowed us to do an investigation. Some stuff happened that night, which impressed the hell out of them. So I'm just all excited about it. Hopefully we can bring some awareness to the Russ House, and hopefully the right person will buy it so it doesn't get turned down and turned into a 7-Eleven.
Oh, wow.
And, they're supposed to be putting it on ABC or some channel, ABC, NBC, something like that, in the near future. I'll let y'all know.
Awesome. Sounds very good. Well, I think that's going to be all for tonight. So I appreciate you coming on, John.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, John, thank you very much, buddy.
And again, why don't you give the contact info quick, both for your team and also for the expo that you have coming up.
Well, my team's Midnight Watchmen. That's midnightwatchmen.com. Paranormal Journeys Expo is our expo, which you can find on midnightwatchmen.com or over on paranormaldictionary.com. Either place, you can find Paranormal Journeys.
Awesome. Well, everyone, have a good night. We will be back next week. And have a great week. Take care, everybody.
All right, have a good night. Matt, John, nice talking to you.
Yep.
All right, take care.
Good night, too. Thank you.